All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. And our next guest is Adam Morrow from Interpress Service, IPSnews.net. His latest piece, I think, is Islamist Parties to Abide by Camp David for now. We'll get to that here in a minute. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Adam?
Hey, good, Scott. I'm good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. Did I mention he's on the phone from Cairo, Egypt today? And so we're not quite, I don't guess, but right around the, you know, year anniversary of the beginning of the Arab Spring over there. Getting there anyway. So we've had elections. The Muslim Brotherhood won. The military self-appointed council that replaced or filled the vacuum after Mubarak left is still in power to some degree or another. And so straighten us all out. Fill us in the details and tell us where are we a year out almost here from the massive uprising in Egypt. And what's it all mean in the biggest, most populous, most influential Arab state?
Sure, Scott. Actually, Egypt just celebrated its year, the first year anniversary of its Tahrir Square uprising. That was on January 25th.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. Well, I'm a fool then. I was thinking it was until like the middle of February or later, but I can't remember.
Sure, no, I think it was Wednesday. I think it was exactly 1 week ago. It's, you know, it's easy to get confused because so much has happened in the last year and you've got different dates in different countries and we're coming up on
I've been missing a lot of radio lately, so anniversaries
sure,
have passed me by, I'm sure, more than that one.
Well, sure. I think it was Tunis celebrated its year anniversary not too long, like a couple weeks ago, I think, as well. But it didn't kick off in Egypt until January 25th. That was the first big day. And then you finally had it sort of climax 3 days later on the 28th. There were just big celebrations or a year anniversary here in Tahrir Square, which was actually quite controversial because it brought two different trends out onto the streets that day. You had a lot of people that were there celebrating the year anniversary. And those celebrations were actually sanctioned by the ruling military council, which declared the day a national holiday. And then at the same time, you also had a lot of protesters and demonstrators that were there who had called for a mass demonstration against military rule. So you had both of those groups who were in the square a week ago. And there was some concern that might lead to violence, but fortunately, it ended peacefully.
All right, now, the Muslim Brotherhood, and then they say in the Western media, the Salafis, whatever that means exactly, they're the big winners of all the parliamentary elections, correct?
Right. Together, all of the Islamist groups, looks like they took down 76.5%, I think was the final number, which is remarkable. That's more than, not only more than two-thirds. More than a two-thirds majority needed to have incredible influence over legislation, but it's also it's more than three-quarters. So they definitely received a very broad public mandate. That's indisputable.
Mm-hmm. And yet, the extent of their power is mandated by the ruling military council, not by the will of the people. So far, am I right?
Well, okay. The deal is that basically they control parliament now, with the understanding that presidential elections, and actually they just wrapped up Shura Council elections as well, just happened, and those elections are for the upper house of parliament, which just has a consultative role, so it's really not that, it's not terribly important, but those elections just happened, the military council has also promised presidential elections to be held in June, after which they have vowed repeatedly that they would relinquish power to that elected president. They currently hold presidential authority, so basically you have a Islamist dominated parliament that's seen its first couple sessions, that's just held its first couple sessions over the course of the last week, and then you have executive authority that is currently being held by the ruling military council, with a promise to relinquish that authority to elected president in June. That's how things stand. That's the timetable that's been laid out by the ruling council.
Uh-huh. And best you can tell, does the Muslim Brotherhood believe that? And do the Twitter revolutionary liberals who thought this was for them, do they believe it? That at least the president will get the authority from the military soon?
Yeah, that's a good question. You basically put your finger on the problem, basically. The Muslim Brotherhood is just being as accommodating as possible with the ruling council because it knows it's just swept elections, and it knows that with free and fair presidential elections promised just around the corner, it's just biding its time. It wants things to go smoothly. The last thing that it wants is any sort of chaos or any sort of problem that might somehow derail this electoral process that it is in the process of winning. So they're just biding their time and really don't want any problems. Whereas these young revolutionary groups, most of which or all of which emerged in the wake of the revolution, are the ones that are calling for these demonstrations. Are basically their demand now is they want an immediate end of military rule. They want the military council to cede power immediately. That's what they're calling for. That's what their continued demonstrations are about, rather than waiting until elections in June.
And what difference is that going to make for them, do they think?
To be honest with you, I think their critics would probably accuse them of just basically not accepting the results of the elections. They're upset about the results of the elections, and they're basically trying to rile people up against the new Democratic leadership, in the hopes of maybe somehow derailing the electoral process. That's how it seems. A lot of these protests and demonstrations. I actually wrote another story for IPS that's more recent than the one you mentioned about Camp David, and that's basically about the. How a lot the whole idea of demonstrations and these million man sort of marches in Tahrir Square and all of that stuff that they've really lost in the past year since last January 25th. They've really lost a lot of public support. Where I would say the bulk of the Egyptian populace now, far from wanting more instability and demonstrations, is actually quite keen for stability right now. Mm-hmm. They've got their economic considerations on their mind. The economy still hasn't improved. The country's total reserves, its total foreign currency reserves, are half of what they were 1 year ago. The stock market lost half of its value. The tourist numbers are down by 30% or something like this. So people right now are sort of more concerned about daily economic issues and getting by, and they don't want to see the streets snarled by demonstrators, or Tahrir Square paralyzed because of million man marches. They're sort of fed up with that, and they want to get back to business as usual, and they want to be able to, they want to see the economy improve. They want to see these long-standing problems that Egypt inherited from the Hosni Mubarak regime, they want to see those problems solved, these long-standing political problems, and specifically these long-standing economic problems. I think a lot of people want to see an elected government come in and start basically rebuilding the country after the 30 years of autocracy and mismanagement that it suffered under Mubarak.
Mm-hmm. And now... there's been some press about the Muslim Brotherhood saying, you know what, really these people are the Romney voters of Egypt. They're the doctors and the lawyers and the country club people, not even necessarily the military people who got rich by being a general, but the actual kind of professionals of the society and whatever. And by their very definition, they are conservative, not radical. And it's maybe scary they have Muslim in their name, but maybe it's not that scary. What do you think about that?
I think you're talking about the Muslim Brotherhood in general.
Yeah.
I would be very leery of any sort of description that you get of the Muslim Brotherhood in a lot of the Western media.
All right, well, hold it right there, and we'll go over this in better detail. I should have asked a shorter question or something. But I'm no good at watching the clock, Adam. Forgive me. All right, everybody, it's Adam Morrow. He's on the line from Egypt. He's a reporter for Interpress Service. That's ipsnews.net. And we're talking about his journalism, what the hell's going on over in Egypt right now, a year after the Arab Spring began. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I couldn't recite it chapter and verse for you or anything, but I sure could recommend Robert Dreyfuss's book, Devil's Game, where he talks about how the British and then the Americans did a lot to support the Muslim Brotherhood, at least back in the days. I don't know about these days. Certainly if you ask any politician on the right, they would say that they have the name Muslim in their name, and that's a terrible terrorist danger. Oh, no. At the very least, it'll be a Taliban-like repression for the people of Egypt in the future, et cetera, like that. And then there at least have been some writers who I've seen have said, you know what, these people basically are like the Rick Santorums of Egypt. They're right-wing conservatives, but they're not really radicals. They're conservatives. And, for example, they would probably at least in the near term keep the Camp David treaty with Israel and try to, reform the economy in a productive way, these kinds of things, like I think you're saying here, Adam. Anyway, I know the least about it, really, so now I turn it over to you to tell us what you think of the Muslim Brotherhood, what you can report about them to the people of the United States.
Yeah, sure, that's a really good point you made. They're definitely not, this tendency to assume that all Islamic groups are extremist is a massive misnomer that's going on. The Muslim Brotherhood is very extremely moderate. It was banned in the 1950s. It was outlawed by the state here under Nasser in the 1950s. There were accusations that they had attempted to assassinate Nasser, but from what I can tell, there's no evidence was really produced of that. So I think that that still remains unconfirmed as far as I'm concerned. But ever since then, they've never conducted any sort of violence. They've always officially forsaken violence. They have they're in an entirely nonviolent group for the past several decades. So in that sense, they have no real ties to terrorism in recent history. They're definitely a moderate force. And what they've done in the last several months, in the run up to the elections and during the elections and after the elections until now, is they've continually reiterated or they've tried to reassure their critics abroad and domestically that they really don't plan to make any radical changes in terms of Egyptian legislation, because they know how they're perceived abroad, particularly, especially by the international media. So they're really bending over backwards to reassure their critics these days that they're not going to do anything radical, either in terms of domestic policy or foreign policy. There's a lot of talk in Egypt. There's a lot of scaremongering in Egypt after the first results of the election started coming in, with a lot of people saying, oh, they're going to make all the women wear the hijab or cover their hair, and they're going to ban tourism. You know, these sweeping statements. So they're going to stop tourism because, you know, a lot of tourism in Egypt is beach tourism and resort tourism, where women wear bikinis and this sort of thing, and that there was talk that they were going to ban the consumption of alcohol and all of this sort of stuff. And since then, they've made repeated statements saying that they weren't going to do any of these things. In fact, they plan to raise tourist numbers. They've laid out this ambitious plan to boost tourism to Egypt. They've said that they would not ban alcohol. They're basically saying that they're looking to focus on addressing serious political and economic problems that remain from the Mubarak era. The country's in desperate need of development and needs a restoration after the last 30, 40, 50 years of autocracy. There are root issues like that, especially the economic ones, that they need to address to keep the country solvent, if nothing else. Issues that, in terms of importance, really trump these minor, what I like to call these red button issues, that tend to rile people up a lot, but actually aren't that important in the grand scheme of things. Certainly, when it comes to the big economic and political problems that Egypt is facing. And now they've also said that the same thing about the foreign policy. And they've also reiterated several times that they don't plan to suddenly cancel the Camp David peace deal with Egypt, for example. They don't intend to do anything radical or sweeping like that. Now, at the same time, they've also said that they might eventually put certain clauses of Camp David up for a public referendum. If they do plan to make changes to Camp David, and the modification of Camp, certain clauses of Camp David aren't entirely out of the question. If there are any changes like that are proposed, those will be put before some kind of popular referendum. Now, for example, Camp David forbids Egypt from deploying its military forces fully throughout the Sinai Peninsula, and that's a source of great concern for Cairo, because you've had these incidents recently. You've had gas pipelines being blown up in Sinai Peninsula. You've had a police station was attacked and destroyed several months ago. And nobody really knows who's doing it. You know, there's talk that these are Islamist extremists out in the desert that are doing this, but it's probably much more likely that this has to do with disgruntled Bedouin tribesmen who were treated very, very poorly under Mubarak, who might have their own reasons for doing these things. So the point is that Cairo can't police the peninsula, because its hands are tied in terms of military deployments in the area. So this is the sort of thing that might come up for eventual modification in the future. But again, they've said that they wouldn't do anything. They wouldn't make any changes unilaterally, and that they would put any changes like that up to a public referendum.
Mm-hmm. Well, so in other words, at the very least, they've got good public relations and good international political skills, and they're trying as hard as they can to avoid fulfilling the caricature of Taliban
exactly.
rule come to Egypt that
exactly.
especially people on the right in Europe and the United States might like to seize on as an excuse to intervene in an even worse way there, which is basically unimaginable, but who knows.
And again, the Egyptian brand of Islam has traditionally been of a moderate nature. It's not these sort of much, much stricter interpretations that you see in the Gulf, for example. Or in
yeah, but you know
like
what? They do talk about the Salafis a lot, and these are the other Islamists that have seized power
sure.
in the parliament over there, and that means Osama bin Ladenites, right?
Sure. I wouldn't go so far as to call them Osama bin Ladenites, but they definitely do have a stricter interpretation.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying I believe that either. I'm pretty sure my tone sounded like that. That's certainly the caricature here, is that Salafi means I'm an al-Zawahiri.
Right, right. They definitely have a stricter interpretation, and they're definitely closer to the sort of Wahhabi strand that you see in the Gulf. That's for sure. But at the same time, the Salafi phenomenon is very interesting because they really sort of came out of nowhere. They were very apolitical. We seldom heard about them over the course of the last, several decades. They only sort of came to the fore within the last two or three years. You started hearing people talking about the whole Salafi movement. Before that, they were confined strictly to a religious role. They were allowed to preach. They were allowed to do sort of, I guess, evangelistic activities and that sort of thing, prophetizing activities, and they were confined to that. But they didn't have a political presence at all. So their emergence in the wake of the revolution and their incredible their unbelievable success, they came in number two after the Muslim Brotherhood, definitely surprised a lot of people. And a lot of people, I'd say, are far more comfortable, even critics of Islamist movements, I would say, are more comfortable with the Muslim Brotherhood than they are the Salafis, only because the Muslim Brotherhood has been around for so long, mm-hmm. sort of knows how to play the political game, sort of is more pragmatic. It's certainly more organized and presents a more monolithic front than the Salafists. Movement does, which the Salafist is sort of broken up between several different sheikhs who all sort of have their own different way of seeing things, whereas the Muslim Brotherhood is extremely hierarchical.
Uh-huh. And now, very quickly, the military, or I guess their police, went and raided these NGOs, which were all just fronts for Hillary Clinton and the National Endowment for Democracy and the CIA and who knows what, right? But who all were they trying to back there, the young liberals or the Islamists too?
Well, it's weird, Scott, because the young liberals here are all outraged by this move on the NGOs, when in fact, like you said, I mean, if they had their reasons for going after... The thing is, you've got the two American NGOs, which are the Republican and the Democrat Institutes, and then there were something like four or five other NGOs that weren't as obviously weren't American in nature, and they went after those as well. So a lot of people were upset that they had gone after these organizations that claimed to be devoted to promotion of human rights and democracy and that sort of thing. But at the same time, apparently they did have valid reasons for going after these NGOs. They had
warrants. You would think from the point of view of the young parties that they would know better than to associate with some anything that even looks like a foreign powers intervention and who's ahead in the game over there.
I agree completely.
They're crazy?
And I think I agree completely, and I think it's a big mistake. But yeah, the thing is, they're just going after anything that the military council does. They're after the military council. They're after the military council and the Muslim Brotherhood, who are sort of the two dominant forces in the country right now. So whatever they do, you know, is going to be the subject of criticism for them. But I agree with you completely. And these raids on these places were sort of played up in the media like nobody's business as well. They were often described as attacks on these places, and as if they were done without any sort of judicial sanction, which was not the case. They went through all the right judicial channels. They had warrants for these arrests. And from what I understand, certainly those two organizations that we mentioned earlier were definitely doing things illegally, in that they were doing things that they did not have a license to do. And you can't come along, you can't set up an organization in a foreign country and just sort of do what you want to do without being sanctioned. I mean, the same thing applies to the United States. So there are definitely two sides of the story with that, and why these young liberals want to defend these like how you describe them, you know, these fronts. I don't know. I think it's a mistake on their part, and they're opening themselves up to charges of, you know, of being manipulated by foreign agendas.
Yeah, well, and especially if we're talking about the young in general, or the young and urban or whatever, the young and educated in general, time's on their side in every country in the entire region, so. You know, don't blow it now. Anyway, I'm sorry, we're all out of time, but I hope we can continue to keep up on events in Egypt with you, Adam.
For sure. Looking forward to it.
All right, everybody. That's a year of the revolution in Egypt. Lots of thanks to Adam Morrow and his friend Ahmad Elassi as well, who've talked with us over the last year about what's going on over there. Adam Morrow from Interpress Service, IPSnews.net.